Elephant in the Room is an anarchist radio show from Dresden, Europe, where we talk with activists from all around the world about politics, life and universe. Airing every second and fourth Monday of the month on Color Radio. You can find the podcast version of the show on the Channel Zero Network or on your favorite podcast platform. From activists for activists.
The band sounds great.
Hello and welcome to our today's radio show here by Elephant in the Room. We have a guest, a friend from Belarus today. And yeah, as you can guess, we're going to talk about Belarus. We didn't talk for quite a while, but we thought it's really important actually to kind of, yeah, keep an eye on what's going on. So hello and thanks for being here.
Hello.
Well, yesterday were the 9th of May, and I remember last year, Lukashenko was one of the only one who had a 9th of May parade to kind of show his power. And even so, COVID was striking the country really hard. All the people had to stay there. Some soldiers fainted during the parade, but it really was still going on. So, but yesterday was 9th of May, and there was no parade. What's going on in Belarus?
No parades anymore.
No parades.
Lives changing. The thing is that last year the parade happened by the estimations of different experts because they paid a lot of money and they also stole a lot of money. So it would be really complicated if they would, for example, decide in March or in February, okay, we cancel parade, so we get all the money back. But half of the money are already spent on vacations, houses, new cars and so on. So they couldn't push the stop button. That's why the parade happened. It was not so ideologically charged as many actually pointed. And Lukashenko was searching for himself for some reasons to say, yeah, we still continue. You know, we have our own parade. Although even Putin said that there is no parade. So this year, the parade didn't happen, not because of coronavirus or because, well, Lukashenko understood that there is a health threat or whatever. It didn't happen because there is no money. There is no money for the parade, and also there is no possibility for Belarusian government to organize a secure parade. They are basically now in the state of occupation, and yesterday's celebrations of the thing is that it's important to explain, it's not 8th of May, it's 9th of May, because it's a celebration of the end of the Great Patriotic War and not of the Second World War. And this is a different story. It started in 1941 and not in 1939. And it's a really heavily ideologically charged Soviet day. So yesterday, there were still a lot of events, a lot of like, you know, soldiers going around and breaking bricks with their heads and stuff. And this narrative of like, we can repeat the victory over fascism. So this was happening. Also, a lot of drunk people. They brought a lot of people from different cities for Lukashenko's speech and for Lukashenko's kind of surrounding. He gave it at 11 in the morning, and no people were eventually allowed to enter who didn't have special passes to hear the speech of the great leader. What was also important, to enter the city center celebration areas, you had to go through the checkpoints. So it was more like, as I said, like, the city under occupation. You would go through the checkpoint. They would check out your bags. They were even checking if you have like some undercover clothes. If your jacket has like a second layer where the flag, the wrong flag can hide, or things like that. They were super paranoid. They wanted to have it as smoothly as possible. They wanted to show that they're under control right now. But at the same time, through this kind of broken celebration, they showed that they have no control over the situation. So parade didn't happen. There were tanks still. They brought a couple of tanks. The kids could look at the tank, sit on the tank, be in the tank. But obviously not enough money to put gasoline in the tank to drive through the city and so on and repair the city after the tank goes through, stuff like that. So it was not really a big celebration. What is also worth mentioning, a lot of politicians from opposition were calling to join the protests on the 9th of May to try to be some kind of provocative, participate in the official events, but at the same time, bring your flags, bring whatever. This didn't happen at all. Like, people didn't follow any calls, but at the same time, most of the calls that are happening right now are happening at the last moment. So they
there were calls, I think, like published on 7th or 6th of May. The mobilizational capacity of the liberals is just a nightmare. They just don't know how to do protests at all, actually.
And if you talk about oppositional, then you mean like this official opposition, like Tikhanovskaya and her team, or about whom are you talking?
It's a huge mess. So if in August they were all like united for the better future against Lukashenko, slowly, step by step, they started like falling apart. There were more and more politicians who would be starting their own political career. Somebody who would, you know, see, okay, Lukashenko regime is collapsing, so it's time for me to start gaining points to become a president. So although Tikhanovskaya now is kind of an official elected president for a lot of people, there are several politicians who are trying to become big enough to join the elections. And this is becoming really destructive because everybody's trying to pull in their own direction. And we have like a former diplomat from Lukashenko's regime. So he's kind of like a regime person who jumped off the boat when the protests got really hot. And now he's trying to become like the new leader. And then another person who is like a long-lasting opposition NGO member who is also trying to say, I'm the new leader. And also like dozens of smaller people who are also trying to take the seat. So this is like all broken into pieces and everybody is like, we are doing this and this is the ultimate solution. We are doing this and this is the ultimate solution. However, it seems like nobody has a strategy. Everybody's really clinging to this opportunistic approach of, okay, maybe people will explode at that point or at that point, but really like saying, okay, that would be our five steps to success is not really happening. Also, we see that mostly like a liberal side of the opposition is now counting a lot on outside pressure. So they pretty much gave up anything happening in the country and they're more concentrated on getting support from US, getting support from Germany, getting support from the countries of the European Union in sanctioning Lukashenko, in trying to put economical pressure also on Russia for Russia's participation in supporting Lukashenko. But this is like, from my perspective, is no long strategy that can bring down Lukashenko. And we see that eventually the new opposition that rose during the summer of 2020 is slowly drifting in direction of the problems of the older opposition, where a lot of money that are, you know, thrown on this political movement from the European foundations, from the liberals outside of the country, is slowly turning people down into like, okay, actually, this is not a bad situation. I'm getting money. I'm kind of like settling up a little bit here and there. And this is really destroying the momentum. Also momentum for the people on the streets, because they see, okay, the people who were yesterday our leaders, so-called leaders, are now grabbing a lot of money and becoming quite rich. So then comes the question, what is the difference between them when they come to power and Lukashenko and so on? So the influence of the opposition on the movement was not really big at the very beginning, but it was still like people were trying to organize around them. And now with this multiple splits, it's going down and down and down more and more. And Lukashenko is becoming more serious in the eyes of political events. You know, they are looking like a bunch of, I don't know, power greedy, whatever mongers who are fighting with each other. And Lukashenko is just like, I'm the great leader. I know what I'm doing. Everything is fine. And also the interesting dynamic is that there are like certain power centers where certain political groups would be concentrated. So you have like Vilnius, for example, with Tikhanovskaya and her surrounding. That's where they are organized. Then there is Warsaw, where there is another person who is also like organizing around himself. And then you have Kiev, also like another person who is also trying to become the great leader. Yeah. So everything is falling apart. It looks really bad eventually. And it's hard to imagine that this mess can turn into something reasonable, all in all.
I actually thought like it kind of sounds like a vicious circle. Like 2010, there were big protests, there were opposition, and then big repression, and again, kind of a, I don't know, purging of the kind of power of the opposition and some sanctions by the European Union and then liberalization again and then protest again. And I don't know.
Well, but the scale like that happened back last 9 months didn't happen before. It really changed a lot of what is happening in the Belarusian society. So that's why they need like these checkpoints. It's not because the opposition has power. It's because like they have this huge masses. I mean, there were over 200,000 people on the streets in Minsk only. And this is really creates a dynamic where the power starts being afraid of the people. And I think this is something that can lead to some changes, but these changes will not come from this organized opposition, but more like another wave of a chaotic, really situationistic or whatever events. And I think what is also important that if you compare it like 10, 20 years ago, there is a lot of work in the social media by the government, in the internet. So, for example, the splits that I was talking, they were partly supported by the Russian trolls. So you see that there are certain people, maybe they are associated with FSB or KGB, and that's their goal, you know, to break up the movement. But maybe they're not, and they like voicing this opinion that would be normally quite fast put down by this kind of like general mood, you know. But then if the person is publishing something online and then you have this masses and masses of trolls who are just saying, yeah, you're doing great job, yeah, fuck Tikhanovskaya, you're the new leader, you will be the president, please become our savior, and so on and so forth, and you just have this like hundreds and hundreds of posts like comments like that, and then somebody comes in and sees that and thinks, what the fuck, I'm in minority, you know. So it breaks up the mood. It also grows the power within the internet. And unfortunately, as those politicians and then those, this whole liberal opposition or the conservative opposition is basically like present mostly on the internet, or they're organized outside of the country, this is where the power is, the kind of like how people are perceiving the power, you know, how many followers you have on YouTube and so on. And this is another really bizarre form of activism. You know, we have a dictatorship, people are sitting in prisons, and then there are this kind of media actions that the opposition politicians would launch, like, let's subscribe to Svetlana Tikhanovskaya in Telegram and have like more followers in Tikhanovskaya channel than at Lukashenko's channel. And this is just breaking up this, I don't know, the atmosphere. Like, what the fuck are we doing? Are we bringing down the dictatorship, or we are trying to, you know, count the followers in Telegram or in Instagram or any other channels, and we are checking out how many likes is on this post or that? This is like really, I think for a lot of people, not a way to deal with the situation, especially for the people who were on the streets, especially for the people who were traumatized by the police violence, who were tortured. This is just goes like beyond understanding what the fuck are they doing.
What do you think were the key points eventually that people didn't succeed in bringing down Lukashenko?
Well, I think one of the important parts here is this obsession with nonviolence and attempts to push the nonviolence on the protests from outside as well. And we saw that in the first days, and it was kind of like by many people really pushed aside for a moment because there was this big momentum. But like looking back to what was happening already, like after, I don't know, 5-6 days, we had this huge push towards nonviolence, like stop the violence, do not try to engage the police, do not try to do anything. And there was this kind of symbolism of people giving flowers to the police that exploded the protest movement, where the people were saying, this is no go. Like, they are basically raping us yesterday in the prison cells, and today you're giving them flowers because you think, what? So, and this nonviolence was not in the core of the protesters. A lot of people were building barricades. A lot of people were, you know, pulling the stones out. But this was brought from some kind of this liberal wave of, okay, that's enough. Now is the time of the changes. And another like really Eurocentric position, or idea, which doesn't work as well here, but there is this idea that if you bring a lot of people on the streets, then suddenly the things will change. Somehow, nobody knows how does it work, right? But someday, like thousands of years ago, thousands of days ago, in some points it worked. So this is like a holy cow of the liberal protest. Just bring as much people as you can and we will win. And in Belarusian case, that was applied again. So this first Sunday of protest where there were over 150,000 on the streets was really a high point of the protest for a lot of people. But at the same time, it didn't bring anything. Like people got together to the streets. They walked around. There was no dynamic of what is going to happen next, wandering here, wandering there. Some people got arrested after the demonstration. But while people were wandering in their nonviolence, you know, celebration that they won, which was another mistake, I'm going to talk in a moment. While they were wondering about that, the police were preparing. They were trying to build up a sufficient strategy to suppress a mass movement that is putting in the center this nonviolence, but also an ugliest form of nonviolence. Like nonviolent can be the Gandhi style. You know, you walk towards the batons and they beat you up. The blood is on the streets and you are still trying to resist. You're like doing a certain type of a shocking protest, right? But in that sense, the protest was like, we don't do anything. We just stick to staying on the streets and marching and doing nothing. So this, I think, was one of the greatest mistakes. And what I was wanted to talk, I just jumped.
Yeah, you said, and the other point was that they were celebrating the nonviolence, I thought, but I don't know if this was the thought.
Yeah. So the point was about the nonviolence is that celebration was not about nonviolence. Celebration was about victory.
Yeah.
So we already won. And this was another narrative that was brought by the liberals from Russia as well. And there was like this super popular blogger, Katz, I don't remember his first name, who was like transmitting basically this message. You are incredible. You won. Everything is going according to the plan. Just walk to the streets again and again and everything will be fine. So he was repeating that narrative and the politicians started repeating that narrative. So basically we won. And the Sunday demonstrations turned from we have to fight a dictatorship into we won over dictatorship. And it's just a matter of time that Lukashenko goes away. So no preparations, this kind of like a euphoria from the first days of protest, from this thousands of people who got traumatized actually by the first days of protest. There was a lot of blood, a lot of trauma, like huge damage to the people's health with like, I don't know, chunks of bodies basically like torn out by the flashbang grenades and so on. So all of that was like, okay, that's over. Basically like the end of history. We won. There is nothing else to do. And this created a really dangerous dynamic where nobody was doing anything at the end of the day. We were just pushing further and further and further with this protest of just marching and marching. And there were people, I mean, in the first days, certain comrades were afraid to go to the demonstrations, anarchist comrades, right? Were afraid to go to the demonstrations because people started doing this kind of like self-organized militia that would try to search for provocateurs in the crowds who would start the fight, which is like also a bizarre concept. Who would start a fight with the police that is losing? So basically like you're starting a fight with the side that is losing, and then people would think that this is a provocation. So there were videos, for example, of the people who were detained. They would have like batons, they would have some helmets and stuff. They were prepared. Maybe they were alone in most of the cases, because to detain a group you need more effort, and I think in the group people felt more secure, but individuals were detained and certain individuals were even passed to the police, which was a really another part of the shock. Like one thing, you're giving flowers to the cops, right? The other thing, you're actually detaining your fellow protesters and you're passing them to the cops, which will produce like even more violence against those people. I mean, the cops were doing horrible things to the people that were detained with equipment for the protest. Like if you're detained as a normal citizen, right, as a normal person, this is one thing. If you're detained with a baton or with a helmet, you're perceived as a fucking enemy. You are like an enemy soldier, but not in the military style. You are basically like an enemy of an enemy of an enemy of a fucking terrorist that is going to be killed and nobody cares about. So this was another part that was over. And I mean, that was lost. And I think the repressions worked. At the end of the day, we missed this moment when we understood that the repressions are working better than our euphoria, our collective energy, our collective power. And when this moment was lost, slowly the protests went down. And now we don't have the even capacity to organize a bigger demonstration because everybody's afraid of the protest. And we also didn't manage, I mean, if you compare right now to Myanmar, for example, where there were street fights and now it's slowly moving into the kind of a civil war scenario, there you see people spend a lot of efforts into changing the narrative into we have to fight it. We have to destroy the dictatorship. In case of Myanmar, this is a military dictatorship. In case of Belarus, this is Lukashenko's dictatorship. But both are in the same way determined to smash the society to gain the power. And in Belarus, this change of narrative didn't happen. It was like this, we are in the middle of Europe. This cannot happen. Like, okay, two people got killed, but we are still in the middle of Europe. So they're not going to do it like they were doing it in Arab Spring or something like that, or in Syria. And slowly this was like escalating more and more and more. And I think this also broke the back of the society that was protesting. So a lot of people are in this broken stage where they are afraid to go on the streets. But they are also afraid of repressions. The violence in the prisons are still going on, and the people who are even short-term arrested is still going on. So I think the state won because it was taking step-by-step approach while the protest was influenced. I mean, the protest was influenced by the liberals, by the Europe-centric liberal thought that the protest should be within the box. And I think this is also an important part for politicians, for the opposition politicians, for raising opposition politicians. This was also a matter of political career. A lot of them are not capable of saying to the barricades. They are not capable of saying, smash the police, fuck the police, burn down the police stations, because they think that within this liberal European narrative, this is unacceptable. And it is unacceptable. I mean, for Merkel to, you know, go around and shake hands with some politicians who are calling to hang Lukashenko on the street with his KGB agents and so on, this is something that she wouldn't be able, you know. She was meeting all these politicians later on, but at the same time, this was at that point unacceptable, and they made the decision to build up their political career instead of, like, calling out for the revolution.
Кашу, споры бесполезно, все кто спорит на парашу, что-то нездорово.
You are here by Elephant in the Room, and today we have a guest from Belarus, and we are discussing about, or we were discussing about, the actual situation in the country and what were the key points why actually the bringing down of Lukashenko didn't work out. And what is interesting to me right now, you were already bringing it the topic that there is still violence in the prisons. So we heard actually about the situation that people still getting arrested, and there are also a lot of people who are waiting the trial in prison. So can you give us a brief overview about the situation on repression right now in the country?
I think a brief overview would be to say it's overwhelming. It's basically like something that you wouldn't hear. I mean, you would learn that in the history books, right? What is happening. And basically, on a regular basis, on a daily basis, you would have political trials of the people who were participating in the protests in the last months and since August, right? Starting from the August, or even like starting even before the August, starting from the summer 2020. Those are quite, I think, they're not super big in the society because there are so many of them. Like at some point, it became just complicated to follow all the processes that are happening. And there are over 500 people who are charged with criminal cases, starting with like really banal things of writing something on the internet. We have, for example, one anti-fascist who wrote like in the comment in Telegram that the cop is like the specific cop is just a swine, like a pig cop. That's it, right? He said the cop is a pig dog, right? And that got him 2 years of a house arrest. And he got like another case of saying somebody's a pig dog. That would bring another 2 years or something like that. So like these kind of things, really simple ones, ending up with people rioting and basically like beating up the cops and so on, which happened on the 9th of August. So recently there was a kind of a big political trial for the government because they were transmitting that as a organized, you know, like an extremist group, where I believe 10 people were prosecuted in the case. And there are videos online of this riot from Pinsk. Pinsk is like a small town south in Belarus where people would use sticks and stones and they just basically like smashed the police lines and got their shields and so on. And some of them got arrested, like 10 of them got arrested, and they got 6.5 years of prison. So this is like the criminal prosecution. And as for like let's say minor prosecution, right? There are also still cops searching for reasons to arrest, starting with like, I mean, people getting arrested for the wide red, wide flowers on the window. Some of the neighbors would report them that they have this flowers, and this would be like a demonstration of forbidden symbolics or hooliganism or whatever. And for that, they would get like 15 days in prison or something like that. So this kind of like stupid things, also cops running around on the streets and detaining some people that they need to get. Apart from that, there is a lot of information collection from the internet. So they keep on digging who is who. They're still hunting the administrators of the local neighborhood assemblies in the Telegram channels. and taking it over. So what they're doing, apart from basically like arresting someone, they would also go into the infrastructure. So you, for example, getting arrested, right, for doing the radio show, they would get access to the whole infrastructure of the radio show, and that, and then start spreading like a state propaganda through those means, or basically like destroying all the groups and all the accounts and saying whatever. That's what they did, for example, with the anarchist Nikolai Didok, who they like tortured to get access to his computer, and then basically like started using his social media accounts to spread their bullshit, to spread like pro-state. They even changed like the avatars on the social media into state emblem and flag and all this bullshit. And they have like a couple of people in the state police who are responsible for that we know the names of, we know who they are, but they are just like the computer, the tech guys, right, who are doing all this stuff, because the other people don't know even how to start the computer. They know how to, you know, use the button against the window and so on. Yeah, so this is the other part of the repressions. And of course, like the people who are in the prison already, whether are waiting for the trial or going to the prison camps or getting arrested for 15 days, are a subject of the violence, starting with like a really psychological terror that is spread all the time. With, for a lot of people, this is shock, but in Belarusian prisons and in Russian prisons, the light is always on. Like, this is the normal practice. This is the normal practice since Gulag times. They always want to see what you're doing. The light is always on. It's kind of complicated to slip, but you slip. And ending up with people beaten up in prisons for disobeying, or just for the cops having a bad mood or whatever they can imagine. Also, any kind of gatherings are now under constant threat. And I'm not talking about political gatherings. So, for example, if you gather with some couple of friends to go to sauna and they know that, okay, you are a political activist and maybe one of your friends is a political activist, then the whole sauna gang can be raided because, well, you never know what they're talking about, right? And there was a case recently where I think like 15 people were arrested. There was like a small banya house where like a smaller group of people went to banya. And then the house owners were arrested, and also some guests of the house owners were arrested next to this banya. So they are trying to like apply this terror basically to show you are not safe in the country, whatever you're doing. And this is also one of the ways to push people out of the country. One of the ways to get rid of the people who can do still something. And that's what they're doing. Yeah.
You have any numbers on how many people actually left the country?
No. There were like months ago numbers of 70,000 people moving to Ukraine, and then 15,000 to Poland, and then some hundreds to Lithuania. Nobody wants to go to Lithuania. But the numbers are not there because it's not really easy to get political asylum in all these countries. So in Poland, it gave, I don't know, like a couple of dozens of political asylums to Belarusian activists.
A couple of dozens?
Yes, like just a couple of dozens. They do not give political asylum. They give like some kind of another status of protection, political protection, so you don't get like a refugee status, but you are legalized. And this is what they're doing with most of the Belarusian migrants, Belarusian political migrants. The same with Ukraine. Most of the people who are moving, they can stay in the country for 3 months, and organizing like a refugee status is a huge process and a huge pain in the ass. And instead of that, they just get a job and get like a residence permit, which is really easy for Russian speakers, for like post-Soviet countries. So the numbers are not really easy to get, and the countries are also not publishing the numbers. At the same time, slowly the tension starts building up between the local communities and the migrant communities. So for example, talking about Warsaw, where a huge amount of Belarusian migrants are now, there is a lot of like dissatisfaction with really a lot of people going in the city center or somewhere around speaking Russian. So you're like seeing the city slowly turning into this kind of another language, right? And although like politically, socially speaking, Belarus and Poland is not that far away from each other, although one is Catholic, the other is Orthodox and all this bullshit, but Slavic tribes, whatever that means. So historically, there was no racism between Poland and Belarus, but now it slowly starts building up because of more and more people coming up. And it's also, I think, connected with a lot of, on top of that, like Ukrainian migrants that are there even before, that were there even before Belarus, after Maidan and after like Donbas war broke and a lot of migrants went outside of Ukraine. Right. So this is like, you don't have numbers, but the numbers are really big because a lot of like also high tech, like IT workers moved their offices or moved quite a huge part of their working personnel outside of the country, which was like to provide security for their workers and shit. Yeah.
And what's about like, if we really call talk about the anarchist and anti-fascist movement, is there people left in the country?
Definitely. I mean, anarchism is not about like 10 turbo anarchists who are, you know, just doing the shit every day, every day and every day till they die or whatever. There are a lot of people who sympathize to the anarchism for sure, and they are like spreading the leaflets or putting the stickers on, and maybe they are just one or two people in their small town, but they keep doing that, and maybe they're not really like super organized in some anarchist federation or an anarchist union or whatever you call it, but it's kind of like this small roots that can take. And all in all, the anarchist movement got really broad spread since August. Like a lot of people saw, okay, the anarchists are like true, you know, they do their shit. Like they're not there for some political gain or whatever. And the media was reporting on the anarchists, and there was a lot of like hooray perspective also from the liberals. And it was like, it was this bizarre point that I mentioned before, right? That the liberals cannot call for the revolution, but some liberals talking like in private discussions would say, it's really cool that you are doing that, right? Like it's really great that we have you who can say revolution. We need a fucking revolution to change this world. But it's such a bizarre political system, right? Where you cannot say yourself what you think, and you need some anarchists who are basically like transmitting your ideas of decentralization, federalization, and destruction of the centralized power and so on. And you are still sticking with the fucking liberals, right? And I think this is also something that can change in the long run, like a lot of liberals getting disappointed. And we've seen that in the end of the 90s and 2000s, a lot of youth organizations saw the anarchists on the streets and were like, fuck yeah, I want to join the anarchists. And we have like these stories of like a really young, not anymore right now, but back then, young, like oppositional youth who would, you know, be an anarchist, but couldn't join the fucking anarchists because there was no anarchist organization in their small town. And they would join like an oppositional organization. And then 15 years later in Warsaw, they would come to the meeting and say, I always wanted to become an anarchist, but I couldn't join it because like you were not there. So this is like a positive development, right? It's really complicated to destroy this fucked up movement that is called anarchism, because it's decentralized, because it's like spreading itself all around. It doesn't have like this control points that you can just shut down. Yeah, but talking about like an organized groups, talking about organized people, most of them are gone. Like most of the people who were in the country, or they're in prison. This is or situation, right? A lot of people decided to leave because of the criminal prosecution and went to Ukraine or Poland. And some people decided to stay. And right now there are like a bunch of people who are still in Belarus who have this threat of prosecution in next, I don't know, months. And this is highly unlikely that they will be left alone. And they are left alone right now because the cops are busy with something else. And by the time they remember about the anarchists, they would come back to the people. So those people decided to stay. But from the feeling, the movement is pretty much smashed. There is no possibility to organize something. And as soon as something is popping up, there is like a small march, for example, recently, like a month ago, organized with the neighborhood assembly and some anarchists, like an organized anarchist group. the cops see that happening, they would go to the through the list of the anarchists and would detain like 10 people or something like that, 5 people. Raid the flat, take away all the technique. You're basically like paralyzed and you can't do shit. And this is like a payback tactic that is working pretty well. Like, they're not hitting the target, right? But for them, it's not really important to hit the target. It is important to send a message to put this collective kind of responsibility. So if somebody is going to organize some actions, you start thinking, what will be the repercussions for that action, not only for you, but for the people around you. And the people around you also start thinking, should you associate yourself with those people that are doing something? Because you are basically in danger, not only because you're doing something, but just because you're standing next to someone, because you are associated with someone, you know someone. And this is working pretty well. And this was working pretty well for the last 10 years, pretty much. They were applying this strategy. Right. So, yeah. And the same goes for the anti-fascist movement, which is standing a little bit aside from the anarchists and has its own bizarre ideas. Yeah, like a lot of people left. Some people are in prison. We have like, I think, 5 anti-fascists right now in prison. And some of them are on the house arrest, or some of them got like this, it's called chemistry. I don't know why it's called chemistry in Russian, but you are going to the prison, you serve your sentence in prison, but you can go to work outside of the prison. Yeah.
So we are talking today about the situation in Belarus, and we were talking about the repression in the last part. And I was asking about the repression inside the country, but I remember there was an incident just recently that also people outside of the country are actually still facing repression, for example, in Ukraine. Can you give us a short idea what is that about?
Well, this is not like the people, but more specific people. And we are talking about mostly anarchists right now. The thing is that the anarchist movement is present in different parts of the world, and different political regimes have different attitudes towards it. Right now, Ukrainian Ministry of Internal Affairs is pretty much controlled by the Nazi Avakov minister, and he has a lot of connections also with the local fascist scene, also the street fascists. So they are not really happy to have, in general, anarchists, and the anarchists that are coming from Belarus, not really as well. And in that atmosphere, it is no wonder that the Belarusian state got like cooperation from the Ukrainian side. They're not cooperating on repressing everybody, but they're cooperating on repressing anarchists. So the Belarusian political police would send them the list of the anarchists they believe to be part of the certain organizations. And then the Ukrainian cops would say, uh-huh, and then would try to repress those people. So people are getting deported, or people are not capable of entering the country after leaving it. So you're going for vacation and you're not coming back. And that's what happened to several activists. And as a result of that, a lot of people are now not going to Ukraine because there is a danger basically of being kicked out back to Belarus. At the same time, it was kind of a, let's say, easygoing stories because the cops were okay for people not to leave to Belarus, but to go somewhere else. So for them, it was like, okay, we want to get rid of you and we don't really care where you are, but then you are not our problem. And yeah, this is happening in Ukraine. But at the same time, the thing is that the anarchists perceived by the regime right now as one of the biggest threats. One of the biggest threats because we do not believe in this nonviolent dogmas and so on. And they do know that there was, for example, at least one partisan group that was sabotaging the certain regime infrastructure in Belarus. And they know that this can repeat itself. So they're putting a lot of efforts into suppressing the anarchists. And at the same time, we know that political regimes can, you know, change their direction 180. And even though people are feeling safe right now in Poland, for example, because Poland is fighting with Russia and it's really bad what is happening in Belarus because of Putin, tomorrow it can change and the anarchists will become again the enemy that will be deported and the people will get again the threat of deportation. So you do not have this, you know, like for the liberal to go to Germany and then the German state will protect your liberal values and so on. Rather, you are insecure wherever you go. You're basically like standing for the ideas that are unacceptable by every state. And you are in contact with the people that are perceived as a threat in every state, as a terrorist or whatever. And on top of that, he was a chief of political police for quite some time, and then he was promoted, and now he's one of the, let's say, prime ministers of the, under the minister. Anyway, he's like a minister of the internal army, like the police army that we have in Belarus. And he said that they're going to hunt the people outside of the country. So they would like create the squads that would hunt, which is in most of the cases a bullshit. Like they do not have capacity to, you know, organize a hit squads like the Russians do. The Russians have way more resources and they are feeling way more politically comfortable. You know, if the Russians are killing someone in Great Britain, this is one thing. If Lukashenko is killing someone in Great Britain, this is a completely different story. He doesn't have so much political power that he can sacrifice to do the political hits in Europe or in any other countries.
Yeah, okay.
Unless it's about like marginal groups that are not interesting for the European Union, as it was, for example, with this guy in Berlin from Chechnya who was killed and didn't have so much repercussion as the murder of some oligarch in Great Britain.
Well, I think there's still a trial. I think the connection between all the secret service is interesting. Because I remember there was also the thing of where the phone was taped also from an activist from Belarus, and eventually it turned out that the SFB was taping the phone in of the Ukrainian activist and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that they are working on the prosecution of certain groups, let's say like that, together. And I think the biggest group that they're talking about is the football hooligans as well. And the German football hooligans ended up in the Russian database when the Russian football championship was happening. And the data protection and all this bullshit didn't play any role. they just passed the data to the Russian secret police, and now some people are in the database, and most probably they will not be able to enter Russia even after the football championship, right? So this is not really surprising. But at the same time, the cooperation between KGB and FSB is way tighter than the cooperation between KGB and SBU or the German secret police or someone else. And the point here as well, it's about the politics again and again and again. So they would be eager to cooperate on prosecuting the anarchists. They would be eager to work together, and they are working together on prosecuting the ISIS terrorists and so on. But they are like not going to work in prosecution of the liberal dissidents and so on. So yeah, it depends who is in power that defines this possibility, this margin of possibility, who you can repress and who you cannot repress, depending on the government that is in power.
Yeah, sure. Well, we talked a lot about repression. I was wondering about the support. I think at the beginning, through the protest, there were already a lot of kind of support structures. For example, psychologists who were giving support to the traumatized people. There were money collected to support families where people were detained, and other people were organizing food parcels to the prisoners. How is all this kind of support? Is this still going on? Are people actually able to support others? How can we imagine that?
Those things are happening for sure. A lot of things are happening still in this anti-repression work, and this became the primary work for a lot of people. But at the same time, the resources that were there in August or in September are incomparable to what is there right now. Resources in the sense of money, basically, right? Because back then it was all around the media, it was everywhere, and the people knew that this is happening, so they were eager to help. And they were donating money more eagerly. And right now, Belarus is off the topic. So the support is really going down. Support to the anarchist or anti-fascist, or support to the liberal initiatives. And I'm talking about, for example, this Bysol initiative, which is the Belarusian Solidarity Initiative, that was collecting millions of euros in the first months. And now they are kind of struggling to get their shit going on. Because of the whole lack of donations on one side. On the other side, there is a huge exhaustion. Like, I mean, working for free for 1-2 months as a psychoanalyst or as a volunteer, this is not a problem. But working for free for the 9 months, or working for free without the perspective that there is an end to that, is a completely different story. So a lot of people are breaking down. There is, again, inside of the country, less and less capacity to donate, to give money, because people are in bigger and bigger troubles themselves, economically speaking. So everything is a little bit looking quite dire in a certain sense. Like, for example, till I think end of 2020, there were still like human rights initiatives that were working in Belarus, and now most of them are moving out. For example, the biggest one, the Spring 96, that was working from 96, is now like they're still theoretically working from within, but all of their workers are working outside of the country. So they're sitting somewhere because the state arrested several of them, and there is like a bigger threat of prosecution. So this is happening, right? And yeah, if you want to support after listening this show, you can donate to this Bysol initiative, which is basically like donating to the liberal initiative that is going to support their own goals. I mean, they have their own goals there, or this Spring 96 that have their own principles as well. You can also support the anarchist Black Cross that has a little bit different principles and a little bit different target group, let's say like that. Right. And I think what is also really important with this huge amount of prisoners is still keep on writing to the prisoners, keep on supporting, and just, you know, getting online and writing a letter. It got to that, right? That Anarchist Black Cross or some other liberal initiative started creating possibilities for writing letters online to make it even easier than just writing a letter and sending something. You can just write a text and this will be delivered to the person. So yeah, do that. I mean, and you don't even have to, you know, think over a story and write a book to the prisoner. just write, hey, I know that you're in prison. It's really sad, or it's really, I know that you exist. I am this and that, and hold on, you know? And this would be enough for the person just to read and remember that somebody out there is still going on, you know, like they're not left alone in the KGB prison, or they're not left alone in some prison camp in the middle of nowhere in the forest.
Okay, so people, that's really important. Don't leave the people who were fighting on the streets alone. I thought that we at the beginning were talking about what were the mistakes. And I think this is an actually important point to kind of maybe talk again at the end to kind of give a perspective, because I think it's to discussion that we have right now, or that we had at the beginning, the things you were mentioning, the key points why the whole thing didn't work out in the way we all hoped for. I think they should be discussed. No? They should be discussed, especially among all those kind of neighborhood assembly, about all those kind of simple people who just started organizing because, yeah, they were fighting for their own freedom. And I think it's important to kind of spread this message, this idea, the thoughts, why things didn't work so well, to give it another chance to not make the same mistakes again. So because we usually discuss this in the political circles, and I think it should, this discussion also should be opened to the other ones to share these thoughts and to kind of encourage people not to give up.
For sure. But I think this is also another part of the political repression, to isolate you, with the political ideas. And it's part of the political repressions, not only of authoritarian regimes, but also of the liberals, that they try to isolate you with your revolutionary ideas, that they try to isolate you with the ideas that capitalism should go down and so on, and marginalize you in your own ghettos so your ideas do not go further on. And that's how they stabilize basically whether liberal democracy or authoritarian regimes, by just, you know, not giving space for discussions. And having these discussions in the neighborhood assemblies is now impossible, because neighborhood assemblies are not capable of meeting together. And some activists of the neighborhood assemblies are sitting in the prisons, you know. So all of this is really hard to do within the country. And I think for the people who are outside of the country, this is possible still. But this is also the momentum that is hard to come to, as a lot of people are traumatized, a lot of people are broken. And this is, it takes time. It takes time to, you know, evaluate what happened, how it should be done in the next time, if it's possible to be done. Because this is another point. Like the authoritarian regimes are getting stronger and stronger with the technological development, and it's becoming more and more complicated to push back. To push back not only in dictatorships, but also in like a democratic regimes. Right.
Okay, thanks a lot for sharing all the thoughts with us today. Where could, like, can you name a few websites where can people get still some information about the country?
I mean, just check out the abc-belarus.org. This is, I think, the main source of the news, because the news are mostly about repressions. And then there is this pramen.org, which is an anarchist initiative. Writes mostly in Russian, but the texts are so simple that you can just use Google Translate, or not making an advertisement for Google, just other automated translation.
Deeper.
Yeah, something like that. To read the texts. Yeah, just go there. And then there is spring96.org, which is basically like the bigger liberal anti-repression work with, yeah, a lot of questions, but still a lot of answers.
Okay. Thanks a lot for having you here today and talking with us and giving us some insight about the actual situation. And good luck with the keep on fighting. And we see each other on the barricades.
Yeah, thanks a lot. See you.